Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Viewers, today we begin the 19th topic of this series in which we are revisiting the collection and transmission history of the Quran. Now, the collection of the Quran issue has arisen because, as we all know, that the Quran was not revealed in one go. It was revealed piecemeal in various installments over a period of about 22 years. And later on, it was brought together. And, of course, this bringing together, this assembly of the Quran was not in its chronological sequence, but it was brought together into a new sequence. We have seen in the past 18 topics or 17 topics that most of the collection history of the Quran has been derived from narratives and historical sources, and we have seen that almost all of them do not hold ground, and we have critically examined most of these narratives and found that they are lacking in veracity. So in this particular topic, we're going to discuss the collection of the Quran in the light of the Quran itself. The Quran itself is alluded to its collection history. And here I would like to point out the name of Imam Hamiduddin Farahi, one of the most distinguished scholars of the subcontinent of the recent past. He has actually directed our attention to certain verses of the Quran and has told and has informed us that basically the Quran itself has described its own collection history and has in detail given the scheme and the plan in which it would be collected. So I would like to read out some verses from the Quran, which Imam Hamiduddin Farahi has actually alluded to in his tafsir of Surah Al-Qiyamah. His tafsir is called the tafsir of Nizam al-Quran. It's not a complete tafsir. It's a tafsir of a couple of about 15 or 20 surahs of the Quran. And in the tafsir of Surah Al-Qiyamah, he has actually presented his thesis in this regard. So the verses of the Quran, according to him, which tell us that the Quran, the Quranic history of the collection of the Quran has been described by the Quran itself. I am now going to read out those verses. So these are verses 16 to 19 of Surah Qiyamah, the 75th Surah of the Quran. And the words are, لَا تُحَرِّكْ بِهِ لِسَانَكَ لِتَعْجَلَ بِهِ إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا جَمْعَهُ وَقُرْآنَ فَإِذَا قَرَأْنَاهُ فَاتَّبِي قُرْآنَ ثُمَّ إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا بَيَانَ. So the translation is, O Prophet, do not move your tongue to hastily acquire this Quran. Indeed, upon us is its collection and recital. So when we have recited it, follow this recital. Then upon us is to explain it. So Imam Hamiduddin Farahi actually posits the fact that these verses of the Quran tell us and tell us in advance, because these are, of course, revealed in the Meccan period and when the Quran was being revealed. So the total scheme of the collection of the Quran has been spelled out in these verses. The Almighty says that He shall reveal the Quran in these installments and in piecemeal, and later on the collected these installments shall be collected and assembled into a unified whole, and then the Prophet would be required to read that new sequence in which that Quran would be assembled, and this new sequence will of course have a new recital, and he would be required to abandon the previous sequence in the previous recital and follow this new sequence in its recital. And during this period in which the Quran is being assembled and brought together finally, if anything further requires any explanation, it will be furnished. So this is, in a nutshell, is how Hamiduddin Farahi has described how the Quran shall be collected and assembled finally, the way these verses describe. Now, first of all, I would like to present some more details in this regard, which Farahi has presented in his exegesis. He says that this piecemeal revelation of the Quran was something which actually made the Prophet very anxious. And contrary to the view of most exegetes of the Quran, who think that the hastiness and the impatience shown at this juncture in these particular verses is because the Prophet would think that he might forget the Quran. Farahi says that this is a very narrow interpretation of these verses, and we must look at the context and the overall scenario in which the Quran was being revealed and in which various verses have informed us regarding how the scheme of his revelation would be. So Farahi says that primarily this impatience and this hastiness of the Prophet, or when there was a delay in any revelation, it was something which was very natural, because the Quran was the basic source of faith and motivation for the Prophet, and any delay in its revelation would make the Prophet very understandably impatient. Similarly, he was assigned the task of communicating the truth to his nation, and he wanted to be relieved of this responsibility as soon as possible. So these are very natural and understandable reasons which made the Prophet impatient. Moreover, he was also very, very concerned about the guidance of his people. He wanted his nation to accept guidance and accept the guidance sent by the Almighty. And he was actually told by the Almighty that he must exercise patience in this regard, because this is not how God's scheme is. It is God who gives guidance, and he is not the person who is going to give them guidance. So therefore, we find even a verse in this Quran which is actually addressing the Prophet in this very manner. It says, إِنَّكَ لَا تَهْدِي مَنْ أَحْبَبْتَ وَلَكِنَّ اللَّهَ يَهْدِي مَنْ يَشَاءُ وَهُوَ أَعْلَمُ بِالْمُهْتَدِينَ. You cannot guide people whom you desire, O Prophet. It is only God who gives guidance to whom he wishes. Only God knows those worthy of being guided. So, according to Farahi, there are other instances in the Quran which clearly tell us why the Prophet had grown impatient and he was anxious to receive the whole of the Quran. So one of them here has been pointed out, that he wanted his nation and his people to accept the guidance, and this would make him impatient. Another reason which Farahi has pointed out in this regard also is based on the Quran, and this is the fact that the disbelievers would actually raise an objection on the revelation of the Quran. And the objection they would raise is that, why is this Quran not sent down in one go? Why is it being revealed in installments, in episodes? So this objection has actually been cited in the Quran in the words, and this is Surah Furqan, verse 32. وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا لَوْلَا نُزِّلَ عَلَيْهِ الْقُرْآنُ جُمْلَةً وَاحِدًا, which means, and the disbelievers said, why is not the Quran revealed to him in one go? So again, we can see that this objection must have stuck in the mind of the Prophet, and he wanted an answer to this objection, that since the Quran is being revealed in episodes, and his opponents are actually raising this objection, why? What is the reason of this? So this too must have made him anxious and impatient. The other thing Farahi has pointed out in his exegesis of this surah is that it must be understood that this situation and this state of impatience of the Prophet was not something which had arisen at the time of revelation of these verses of Surah Qiyamah, in which he has been told to exercise patience. This was his general situation. This was his general state of mind, because he was faced with this situation in his general life pattern. And he has actually been told by the Almighty in various verses of the Quran that he must exercise patience and wait for the scheme of the Almighty to materialize, and wait for the whole of the Quran to be revealed. Thus, for example, in Surah Ad-Dahr, he has been told to exercise patience, and he has been told to actually seek the Almighty in this regard. And the words used in this at this place in Surah Ad-Dahr, to be exactly, if I pointed out, are Inna nahnu nazzalna alayka al-Qur'ana tanzila fasbir li hukmi rabbika wa la tuti' minhum asiman aw kafura wazkur isma rabbika bukratan wa asila wa min al-layli fasjud lahu wa sabbihhu laylan tawila. We alone have revealed this Quran to you in an elaborate manner. So with perseverance, wait for the judgment of your Lord, and pay no heed to any sinner or ingrate among them. And remember the name of your Lord from dawn to dusk, and prostrate yourselves before him in the night, and glorify him till late at night. Similarly, Farahi says that at another place in the Quran, in Surah At-Taha, it has been pointed out that mankind is someone, human beings are such, they are weak in their resolves and in their pledges. So had the Sharia, the Quran, been revealed to them in one go, it would have adversely affected them. It would not have been the right manner to receive the Quran, because they need time, and they need instruction, and they need training, and this comes with reprieve and respite in between revelations. So he says that at another place which actually tells the Prophet to exercise patience and wait until the Quran has been completely revealed, the words are from Surah Taha, as I said, وَلَا تَعْجِلْ بِالْقُرْآنِ مِنْ قَبْلِ أَنْ يُقْزَى إِلَيْكَ وَحْيُهُ وَقُرْ رَبِّ زِدْنِي عِلْمًا وَلَقَدْ أَهِدْنَا إِلَىٰ آدَمَ مِنْ قَبْلِ فَنَّسِيَ وَلَمْ نَجِدْ لَهُ عَزْمًا. Which means, And be not in haste in acquiring the Quran before its revelation is completed to you. So these are very, very clear words that he, until the whole of the revelation is completed, he should not show haste. And instead, and pray, O Lord, advance me in knowledge. And before this, we took a pledge from Adam, but he forgot, and we did not find determination in him. So again, this is something which is evident from the overall situation in which the Prophet found himself in. And as we just discussed earlier on, that the one of the objections which the disbelievers would raise again in regarding the revelation of the Quran would be, why is it not revealed in one installment? So this has also been answered at another place, and and Farai has pointed this out, and he says that the fact that had the Quran been revealed in one go, it would not have been appropriate even for the Prophet himself, because he needs assurance and he needs that this be done in a very gradual way. And the words that actually answer this objection are also found in Surah Furqan, in the words in verse 32. So the words are, وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا لَوْ لَا نُزِّلَ عَلَيْهِ الْقُرْآنُ جُمْلَةً وَاحِدًا. This is the same verse which we had just discussed. But the next part is, كَذَلِكْ لِنُثَبِّتَ بِهِ فُؤَادَكْ وَرَتَّلْنَاهُ تَرْتِيلًا. And the disbelievers said, why is not the Quran revealed to him in one go? The answer given by the Almighty is, thus shall we reveal it piecemeal to strengthen your heart, and we have revealed it painstakingly. So according to Farahi, this verse is an ample testimony to the fact that the reason why the Quran has is being revealed in installments to the Prophet was that it needed strength. And the Prophet could acquire this strength of heart only gradually. And had it been revealed in one go, he would not have been able to bear the brunt of it. Similarly, at another place, the Quran, according to Farai, is pointed out and assured the Prophet that he should be patient and wait until the revelation of the Quran is complete, and he will actually should not worry about whether it's going to get preserved or not, because it's the responsibility of the Almighty. And the words cited by Farahi vis-a-vis from the Quran are, سَنُخْرِئُكَ فَلَا تَنْسَى إِلَّا مَا شَاءَ اللَّهُ. Soon we shall recite it to you, then you will not forget except what God pleases. So these are the verse, this is verse 8 of Surah A'la. So summing up, Farai has actually said that becoming impatient and becoming anxious at the revelation of the Quran had become a permanent feature of the Prophet's life. And he would actually feel very anxious and worried regarding the completion of this revelation. And as we've just seen, he was assured by the Almighty at various instances that it is essential for the instruction of the people that he is leading and for himself that this be done gradually. In the case of Surah Qiyamah verses, which Farai has pointed out in the very beginning, which I've just discussed, he says that this assurance actually took the form of the Almighty delineating the whole scheme of the revelation of the Quran. When the Prophet actually was feeling impatience and he was anxious at the time of the revelation of the Surah Qiyamah verses as well, at that time the Almighty actually assured him by not only assuring him the manner in which he had done so earlier, but by actually delineating and explaining to the Prophet the whole scheme of the revelation of the Quran, so that this could bring peace to his mind. And as we have seen, the verses of Surah Qiyamah clearly communicate to the Prophet that he should not be impatient and hasty until the Quran has been revealed. The Almighty has said, "Inna alayna jam'ahu wa Qur'ana." It is our responsibility to have the Quran collected and recited. فَإِذَا قَرَأْنَاهُ فَاتَّبِعِ قُرْآنَ. So when we have recited it, you have to follow this new recital, this new sequence. You should not be worried if the Quran is being revealed in installments. It shall be revealed the way it is being revealed in piecemeal. The Almighty will bring it together when the completion has taken place of this the first chronological revelation. And then he will recite it afresh in a new sequence. And the Prophet is then bound to follow this new sequence with its new recital and abandon the previous one. And فَإِذَا قَرَأْنَاهُ فَاتَّبِعْ قُرْآنَ ثُمَّ إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا بَيَانَ. The next verse is that if there is anything that requires any explanation at that time, the Almighty will furnish it. And then the verses go on and say that if his people are not accepting faith faith. That it is not because the Quran is being revealed piecemeal, but because كَلَّا بَلْ تُحِبُّونَ الْعَاجِلَةَ وَتَذْرُونَ الْآخِرَةَ, because they are the ones who have left the hereafter, and they are more engaged and involved in the love of this world. So the reason that they are not accepting faith is not because the Quran is being revealed piecemeal. It is because they have become slaves to their own desires and they have forsaken the hereafter. So Farai says that this is the broad meaning of the verse, and it must be understood in its context. It is not that it is severed from its context the way some of the scholars view it. It is deeply related to the context of Surah Qiyamah itself, and also in the whole background of the Quran. So Farai says that if all the implications and indications found in these verses are unfolded, and then they would imply, this is what he has written in his tafsir of Surah Qiyamah, لِمَا تَشْتَهِدْ هَاقَذَا فِي تَلَقَّ الْوَحِي أَمَّا حِفْزُهُ وَجَمْعُهُ فَعَلَيْنَا وَأَمَّا هِدَايَةُ قَوْمِكَ فَهُمْ مُنْهَمِكُونَ فِي مُحَبَّةِ الْعَاجِلَةِ فَكَثِيرُ الْقَوْلِ وَقَلِيلُهُ سَوَاءٌ عَلَيْهِمْ. Farai says, why are you burdening, O Prophet? He is actually unfolding the implications of the Surah Qiyamah verses, and while unfolding them, he has written these words. So, why are you burdening yourself, O Prophet, with such hard work in acquiring the revelation? The responsibility of preserving the Quran and its collection rests with us. As far as the guidance of your people is concerned, your people are engrossed in the love of the world. Whether you recite a small or a large quantity of revelation to them, it will make no difference to them. So this is how he thinks that these verses are arranged and the message that they convey. Also, viewers, he has drawn certain conclusions from these verses in his exegesis of Surah Qiyamah, which I'm now going to read out. According to Farai, he says that these verses, if these implications which I've just read out before you, if they are understood, then there are certain other conclusions as well which can be drawn, and which he has in fact drawn. And he has stated them in his tafsir of Surah Al-Qiyamah. And he says, Al-Awwal. أن القرآن يجمع في أهد النبي ويقرأ عليه بالنسك واحد فإنه لو أنجز هذا الوعد بعد أهد النبي لم يأمره باتباعه الثاني أن النبي معمور بالقراء حسب هذه القراءة الثانية التي تكون بعد الجمع وليس للنبي أن يلقى عليه شيء من الوحي ولا يبلغه الأمة أقلا ولا أمره الله تعالى في قوله ولما أمره الله تعالى في قوله يا أيها الرسول بلغ ما أنزل إليك من ربك وإن لم تفعل فما بلغت رسالته أمرا عاما فلا بد أن علم النبي الأمة قراءته الأخيرة التي عليه القرآن في اللوح المحفوظ فإن الأرض الأخيرة لا بد أن تكون مطابقة بالعصر والثالث أن بعد هذا الجمع والترتيب بين ما شاء الله بيانه من التعميم والتخصيص والتكميل. So these are the conclusions that he has drawn from these Surah Qiyamah verses. I'm just going to translate what he has written here. First, the Quran was collected and arranged in the lifetime of the Prophet and recited out to him in a specific sequence. If this promise was to be fulfilled after his death, he would not have been asked to follow this new recital referred to by the words, so when we have recited it out, follow this. إِذَا فَتَّبِ قُرْآنَ. These are the Arabic words. He says that they would not have been there had this not been the case. This is the first conclusion that he's drawn. Second, the Prophet was directed to read according to this second recital that took place after this arrangement of the Quran in its final sequence. It is against sense and reason that he be divinely revealed something and then he not communicated to the Ummah. And also when the following words of the Quran, which of course is a Quranic verse, بَلِّغْ مَا أُنزِلَ إِلَيْكَ مِنْ رَبِّكَ فَإِنْ لَمْ تَفْعَلْ فَمَا بَلَّغْتَ رِسَالَةً. O Prophet, communicate what has been revealed to you. If you do not do so, you would not have discharged your duty as a prophet. These are verses, this is verse 67 of Surah Maidah. So he says that this verse, and when the following words of the Quran, which is of course the translation that I read out, they constitute a general directive. It is certain that the Prophet must have communicated the final recital of the Quran in the way it was found in the guarded tablet or the Lawh Mahfuz. This is because the final recital had to match the original recital found in the tablet. So this is the second conclusion that he has drawn, that It was a must that the Prophet, as per the responsibility assigned to him, would have communicated this new arrangement with its new recital to his followers. The third conclusion that he has drawn. Third, after this collection and arrangement, the Almighty explained whatever he intended to from among specifying a general directive or vice versa, at-tamim wa-takhsis, furnishing supplementary directives like at-takmil, and reducing the extent of application of some directives, which is at-takhfif. So these are various terms of tafsir which he has actually used by telling us that this is how, in the final step, if any explanation, any takhfif, any ta'meem, any takhsis was needed or takmeel was needed, it was provided and furnished by the Almighty. Now, this is how, up till now, we have seen how Farahi has actually interpreted these verses of Surah Al-Qiyamah and also gone on to draw certain conclusions. We shall, of course, later on also discuss how other exegetes have interpreted these verses of Surah Al-Qiyamah. But again, that is left for a later episode. Presently, we need to discuss and understand how Farahi has come to this conclusion. Viewers, he has also gone on to then provide us with certain historical details, although he has not actually furnished exact historical details. He has just alluded to these details, which tell us that the scheme which has been delineated here in these verses of Surah Al-Qiyamah was followed, the way it was followed, and how it actually came into practice and can be seen in the pages of history. So he says that this whole scheme of Quranic collection and arrangement is also very evident from various narratives. This scheme which has been explained by the Quran is also evident from various narratives. And he is now citing some examples. I am now going to present those points and statutes which Farahi has presented in corroboration from historical material which corroborates or substantiates this scheme presented by the Quran itself in Surah Al-Qiyamah. So this is what he says. This is what Farahi says. Number one, the Prophet would read out whole surahs of the Quran to people, and this could not have been possible unless they had been read out to him in their specific sequences. The companions would listen to and preserve the Quran in accordance with this arrangement. This is the first point that he has made from historical sources. And let me also point out that although he is not given reference to these historical sources, presently, right after these points that I am going to present before you from Farahi's exegesis, I will try to present before you more historical details which actually substantiate these points which Farahi has drawn from history, but not actually cited history itself. He has just made some principal statements. So the first principal statement he has made is that the Prophet would read out whole surahs of the Quran, which is evident from historical narratives, which I shall presently refer to. And this would have only been possible, according to Farahi, had these surahs been read out in their specific sequences, and the companions would listen to them and then preserve them in their memories and also write them down. The second point that he has made is, the Prophet would direct the companions to place the revealed verses of the Quran at specific places of specific surahs, and the companions would obey this directive. So the second thing he said is that there are historical narratives which tell us that the Prophet would direct his companions to place such and such a verse in such and such a surah at such and such an instance. The third point which he has made vis-a-vis referring to historical data in this regard, and he says that when some explanatory verse would be revealed, the Prophet would have it written at either the place immediately following the verses which needed this explanation or at the end of the surah, in case these verses related to the whole theme of the surah. So deliberation reveals another distinct feature of these explanatory verses. They themselves contain words which would show that these verses have in fact been revealed as an explanation. For example, in Surah Baqarah, the words are, كَذَلِكَ يُبَيِّنُ اللَّهُ آيَاتِهِ لِلنَّاسِ. Thus does the Almighty explain his verses for people. So this is the third point which Farahi has made. He says that the Surah Qiyamah verses had promised that whenever any explanation is needed of a directive or any question is asked and it is answered, that shall be furnished, and that explanation would either be placed at the end of the surah if needed, if it's related to the theme of the whole surah, or right after the place where the issue had occurred. And whenever this would happen in the Quran, it would be followed by the words كَذَلِكَ يُبَيِّنُ اللَّهُ, which means that this is how the Almighty explains his directives in accordance with the promise he has made in Surah Qiyamah that he would explain whenever any clarification is needed. This is the third point, and this, of course, is something which he has alluded to directly from the Quran, the tabyeen verses of the Quran, according to Farahi. And the fourth point in this regard, which Farahi has made while referring to historical data, is that it is known from authentic and agreed upon narratives that once the Quran had been revealed, Gabriel recited out the complete Quran to the Prophet in its real sequence, and the Prophet taught it to the Ummah the way he received it from Gabriel. So we know that this is something which happened in history. And as I said, that these are the points which Farahi has actually just alluded to. And it's actually is some historical corroboration of the way these Surah Qiyamah verses have been interpreted by him and explained by him. But as I said earlier on, that we still need to find this historical data which Farahi has just referred to by taking certain instances of this data, but he has not actually cited it. So now what I'm going to do is, for the benefit of our viewers, I'm going to cite out specific data for all these four points which Farahi has drawn and presented at how history and in one of the places, the Tabeen case, the Quran itself has actually has gone about fulfilling and explaining what it had said in the Surah Qiyamah verses. So the first of them, remember the first point which Farahi had said was that the Prophet would read out complete surahs of the Quran to his companions. This he would do so generally in the prayer also, in which the surahs were recited, and of course at other instances also we know when he would recite the Quran in the Baytullah and at other instances as well. So here are just a few examples of how the first point of Farahi can be seen reflected in our historical sources and our historical narratives. So we have a narrative in the Jami' Sahih of Imam Muslim, which says that Abu Barzah al-Aslami says that the Prophet will read out from 60 to 100 verses in the Fajr prayer. So this is how he would read so many verses in the Fajr prayer. Then we have a narrative also from Imam Muslim's al-Jami' Sahih, which says that Abdullah ibn Sa'ib said that once when the Prophet led them in the Fajr prayer in Mecca, he began reading Surah Mu'minun until he reached the portion where the episode of Moses and Aaron is mentioned. Similarly, at another place in Imam Muslim's al-Jami' Sahih, it is mentioned that Jabir ibn Samura says that the Prophet would read Surah Qaf in the Fajr prayers. Another example, again from Imam Muslim's Sahih, is that Abu Huraira narrates that the Prophet would read Surah Sajdah and Surah Dahar in the Fajr prayer offered on Fridays. Then another example, again this time from Tabarani's Mujam al-Kabir. Jabir says that he heard the Prophet read Surah Kaf and Surah Yasin in the Fajr prayer. Still another example is that Amr ibn Hurais reports that he heard the Prophet read Surah Takwir in the Fajr prayer. Again from Imam Muslim's al-Jami' al-Sahih. Then we have a narrative from Al-Mustadrak of Imam al-Hakim. It says, Jabir ibn Samura says that the Prophet would read surahs like Surah Waqia in the Fajr prayer. Uqba ibn Amir reports that the Prophet read Surah Hamim al-Sajda in the morning prayer, as cited by Imam Nasa'i in his Sunan al-Kubra. Aisha reports that the Prophet read Surah Araf in the Maghrib prayer, again cited by Imam Nasa'i in his Sunan al-Kubra. Utbah ibn Masud reports that the Prophet read Surah Dukhan in the Maghrib prayer, as cited by Imam Nasa'i in his Sunan al-Kubra. And then we have Muhammad ibn Jubair ibn Mut'im reporting from his father, who heard the Prophet recite Surah Tur in the Maghrib prayer. This is from Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Imam Bukhari. Another narrative from Imam Bukhari says, Umm Fadl bint Haris anha, heard the Prophet recite Surah Mursalat in the Maghrib prayer. Another narrative is that Ibn Umar anhu, reports that the Prophet once read Surah Muhammad in the Maghrib prayer. This is cited by Al-Haysim in his Mawarid al-Zam'an. And then again we have Bukhari citing Bara reports that he heard the Prophet read Surah Teen in the Isha prayer. Abu Huraira reports that the Prophet would read Surah Buruj and Surah Tariq in the Isha prayer. And this has been cited by Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal in his Musnad. And then we have Numan ibn Bashir. He says that the Prophet would read Surah A'la and Surah Ghashiyah in the Eid and the Friday prayers. This has been cited by Imam Muslim in the Jami' al-Sahih. And then we have Umm Hisham binti al-Harisa. She said that she learned Surah Kaf from the Prophet as he used to recite it in the Friday sermon. This has been cited by Abu Nu'aym in his Al-Musnad al-Mustakhraj. Uqba ibn Amir al-Juhani once asked the Prophet to read out to him Surah Hud or Surah Yusuf. The Prophet replied that Uqba will never read something more eloquent more eloquent to God than Surah Falak. And this has been cited by Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal in his Musnad. And then we have another narrative from the Musnad of Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal, and it says, Usman ibn Abi al-As, ibn Abi al-As said that the Prophet asked him to read shorter surahs of the Quran in the prayer for the convenience of people, and even prescribed Surah Iqra for this purpose. Then we have Amr ibn Abd al-Qais. When Amr ibn Abd al-Qais accepted Islam at the hands of the Prophet, he was taught Surah Fatiha and Surah Iqra by him, by the Prophet himself. This has been cited by Ibn Sa'd in his At-Tabqat al-Kubra. And then another narrative from Tabqat of Ibn Sa'd says, Burayda ibn Husayn ibn Abdullah was taught the initial verses of Surah Maryam by the Prophet. So the list goes on. I'm going to content myself to the data I have just presented. Basically, it tells us what Faraid had initially pointed out, that the Prophet would read out whole surahs of the Quran, not only in the prayer, but at other instances as well, as you have seen. There are a number of other historical narratives as well. But I will just content myself to the examples that I have cited, just to point to the fact how the data which Farahir alluded to stands in his favor. The next point, if you recall, Farai had made was that the Prophet himself would direct his companions to arrange various verses within a surah. So let me present some narratives which Farai has just alluded to, but not actually cited them. I'm going to cite some of these narratives to see and to corroborate how Farai has actually pointed out in this data in the right direction. So this is a narrative from Abdullah ibn Abbas, and it says, "Qala Usman, inna Rasulullah kana iza nazala alayhi shay'un yad'u ba'da man yaktub 'indahu fa yaqul dha'u hadhihi fi as-surah allati yuzkaru fiha kaza wa kaza." This has been narrated by, this has been recorded by Imam Nasa'i in his Sunan al-Kubra. It says, Ibn Abbas told us, Usman said, when something would be revealed to the Prophet, he would call to his presence a person who could write and tell him, place these verses in the surah in which is mentioned such and such a thing. So the Prophet can be seen here giving explicit directions in placing certain verses of the Quran at certain instances in the surah. And then we have another narrative. This narrative has been recorded by Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal in his Musnad. And it says, it is actually from Usman ibn Abi al-As. It says, An Usman ibn Abi al-As, قال, كنت عند رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم جالسا إذ شخص ببصره ثم صوبه حتى كاد أن يلزقه بالأرض. قال, ثم شخص ببصره فقال, أتاني جبريل عليه السلام فأمرني أن أضع هذه الآية بهذا الموضع من هذه السورة. إن الله يأمر بالعدل والإحسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون. So Usman ibn Abi al-As said, I was sitting in the company of the Prophet. He raised his gaze and then lowered it until it was as if it was glued to the ground. Then he raised his gaze and said, Gabriel came to me and ordered me that I insert this verse at its place in its surah. And the verse obviously was, إن الله يأمر بالعدل والإحسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون, which means, God enjoins you to justice, goodness, and spending on the kindred, and forbids lewdness, evil, and arrogance. He admonishes you so that you may take heed. So we can see that the Prophet is again directing one of his companions to place a particular verse at a particular instance in a surah. And then, viewers, we have another instance in this regard, and this is from Imam Muslim's Al-Jami' al-Sahih. And it says that it has been actually reported that from Madan ibn Talha, and the words are, An Madan ibn Abi Talha, Anna Umar ibn al-Khattab, Khataba yawm al-Jum'ah. Then there is some other details which I'm just skipping. I'm just taking you to the data which actually I want to display before you, and that is ma raja'at. This is what Umar ibn al-Khattab is saying. Ma raja'tu Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam fi shay'in ma raja'tuhu fil kalala wa ma aghlaza li fi shay'in ma aghlaza li fihi hatta ta'ana bi isbi'ihi fi sadri fa qala ya Umar ala takfika ayatu as-sayf allati fi akhir surah an-nisa. Madan ibn Abi Talha said that once Umar delivered a Friday sermon, and then while skipping some of the details, I'm just going to translate the part which I read out before you. The thing I asked the Prophet most, this is what Umar is saying, the thing I asked from the Prophet most was the explanation of the word kalala, and nothing was as heavy on me as this until he poked his finger into my chest and said, is not the verse revealed in the summers and placed at the end of Surah Nisa sufficient for you in this regard? So again, we see that this is something in which we find that a particular verse being placed at a particular instance in the surah is something which is divinely directed, and the Prophet at the behest of the Almighty is actually referring to it. And we know that in this regard, another instance is that the companions themselves knew full well that since this arrangement was divinely fixed, they could not actually change it in any way. So the companions themselves were so well aware of the fact that these verses have been arranged in surahs by the Prophet himself at the behest of the Almighty that they do not have any authority to tamper with them or change their arrangement. A narrative in this regard has been recorded by Imam Bukhari in his Al-Jami' al-Sahih, and that is, it is reported by Ibn Zubair. It says, قال Ibn Zubair, قلت لعثمان بن عفان والذين يتوفون منكم ويذرون أزواجا قال قد نسختها الآية الأخرى فلما تكتبها أو تدعوها قال يا ابن أخي لا أغير شيئا منه من مكانه. So this is a dialogue between Abdullah ibn Zubair and Uthman ibn Affan, and see what they are saying. So Ibn Zubair said, I told Uthman, the verse وَالَّذِينَ يُتَوَفَّوْنَ مِنْكُمْ وَيَذْرُونَ أَزْوَاجًا, this is a specific verse, and those of you who die and leave behind wives, he says that this has been abrogated by another verse. So why have you still written it or left it in the Quran? So Abdullah ibn Zubair telling the Uthman that since this has been abrogated, so why is it found in the Quran? Because he thinks that it has been abrogated by another verse. And look what Uthman replies. He says, O nephew, I cannot change anything from its place in the Quran. La ughayyiru shay'an minhu min makanihi. I cannot change any verse from its place in the Quran, which clearly tells us that again, these verses, the way they have been placed, they have been placed there at the behest of the Prophet himself on divine bidding. So this is some of the data I have presented in corroboration of Farahi's second point, which according to him, the second point was that the Prophet would actually have particular verses placed at particular instances in certain surahs, which tell us that he was doing this at divine bidding, and hence this task was not left to anyone later on. Now the third point, if you remember, that Farai had made was regarding the Tabyeen verses, and these Tabyeen verses are found at various instances in the Quran. You can look them up, but just to give a very brief example, two examples in fact. One of these examples is the Kalala verse itself, which we have just seen. It was placed at the end of Surah Nisa, and once this verse was revealed in the response to a question, we find that the Tabyeen verse actually following it. The end verses of on which this Kalala verse ends actually is a Tabyeen verse, which tells us that this is how the Almighty has fulfilled his promise of explaining something, the promise that he had made in Surah Al-Qiyamah. And then we have an example in which the Prophet actually, in which the Quran actually has answered a certain question or given a certain relief in a certain manner, and then explained that it has done so in accordance with the promise that the Almighty had made in the Surah Qiyamah verses. And the issue at hand is that in Surah An-Nur we find that the Almighty had asked people to enter the private lodgings and houses of people by taking permission from those people. This has been mentioned in verses 27 and 28 of Surah Nur, which says, لا تدخلوا بيوتا غير بيوتكم حتى تستأنسوا وتسلموا على أهلها. Believers, enter not the houses other than your own until you have introduced yourselves and wished peace to them. However, later it was clarified that slave men and women and immature children, they are not required to seek permission each time they enter these lodgings or houses, because of course this would have become very burdensome for them, because they were living right in those quarters in that area. And they were told that they would require permission in just three specific times: before the Fajr prayer, after the Isha prayer, and after the Zuhr prayer during the afternoon nap. So this is how the Almighty later on provided takhfif, some relief. And when this relief was provided, you can see these verses actually, which follow these verses later on, the original verse of which I just cited regarding entering the houses after seeking permission. These are verses 27 and 28. But later in verses 58 and 59, it is said that slave men and women and immature children, they are not required to seek permission every time they enter the houses of these people, of their masters or their parents, but only in these three specific times. I'm just going to leave out the actual verses, but just concentrate on the final verse, which says, كَذَلِكَ يُبَيِّنُ اللَّهُ لَكُمْ آيَاتِهِ وَاللَّهُ عَلِيمٌ حَكِيمٌ, which again is a Tabyeen verse, which says that, thus does God explain to you his verses, and God is all-knowing and wise. So this is an example of how Farai has alluded to the fact that there are verses in the Quran of Tamim or Takhsis or Takhfif, depending upon the nature of the directive, which follow some original directive, and which when placed later on actually tell us that they, in accordance with the Surah Qiyamah verse, in which it was said that whenever any explanation or detail is required regarding some directive, it shall be furnished later on. So this is how the Quran has fulfilled its promise. And this is just one instance which I've given before you as an example. Several other instances of these Tabyeen verses can be looked up in the Quran. And finally, viewers, the fourth point which Farai had made while referring to historical data. This third point, of course, is not historical data per se. It's actually the Quran itself. But the fourth point is relates to this historical data, and which, in which, remember, he had said that there are historical narratives which tell us that the Quran was actually revised at the end between Gabriel and the Prophet himself, and this final review was called Al-Irza Al-Akhira, and this revision actually took place twice, so that everything could be done so in a very firm and a very concerted and established manner, and nothing remains amiss. So this fourth element which Farai has pointed out, again, it has historical corroboration, and just to give you a few narratives in this regard, the first of these narratives has been cited by Imam Bukhari, and it says, كَانَ يُعْرَضُ عَلَى النَّبِيِّ صلى الله عليه وسلم القرآن كُلَّ آمٍ مَرَّةً فَعُرِزَ عَلَيْهِ مَرَّتَيْن فِي الْعَامِ الَّذِي كُبِزَ فِيهِ. Abu Huraira stated, the Quran would be presented to the Prophet each year, and the year he died, it was presented to him twice. So it was presented twice to him, so that once the completion of the Quran had taken place, everything should be done in a very, very stern and a strict way, so that everything should be there should not be any blemish in this regard, and everything was done in a very precise way. And then we have another narrative also in Imam Bukhari's Al-Jami al-Sahih. The first of these narrative was actually by Abu Huraira, and this one is by Ibn Abbas. It says that an Ibn Abbas qal kana rasulullah ajwadun nas wa kana ajwadu ma yakuna fi ramadan hina yalqahu jibril wa kana yalqahu fi kulli laylatin min ramadan fayudarisuhu al-quran. Ibn Abbas stated, the Messenger of God was the most generous of people, and it was Ramadan that he was the most generous when he would meet Gabriel. He would meet him every night during Ramadan and would present and discuss the Quran with him. So in normal Ramadans, he would meet every night. Gabriel would meet the Prophet every night, and the two would discuss the Quran, which would be revealed during that single year, during that past year. But as we have seen from the previous narrative, when the Quran was completed, we find that it was actually reviewed twice in the Ramadan, or the last Ramadan of the Prophet before he passed away, after which he passed away actually. So in that particular Ramadan, it was reviewed twice, so that precision takes place and nothing falls and there's nothing amiss. So this is some historical data, viewers, which I have presented in corroboration of what Farai himself has had alluded to earlier on. We will continue our discussion in the next episode by seeing that how our exegetes have generally interpreted these verses quite differently from the interpretation of Imam Farahi. And then we will also critically review not only Imam Farahi's interpretation, but also the interpretation of our exegetes, and see how these verses of Surah Al-Qiyamah unveil to us in precision the episode, the scheme of the collection of the Quran. Until then, أقول قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر المسلمين والمسلمات.